Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted. This is your trigger warning. This podcast contains unfiltered conversations about trauma, abuse, and survival. Discretion is advised. This is not therapy or medical advice, just real people sharing real stories. So please take care of yourself and pause if you need to. If this conversation hits home, grab the book Survival Mode Exit Plan, your raw, unapologetic blueprint to break free. Available now by scanning the QR code or clicking the link in the comments. Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. I am your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and today we have Latera, who's going to share her story. So why don't you introduce yourself?
Hello. Hello. Thank you so much for having me, Leticia. My name is Latera Wise. I am the Heartwork Strategist. I am a life coach for women, author as well. I'm really just a woman living in purpose and trying to bring everybody else along. So that journey kind of started from being in survival mode. It started, and I think as I was preparing to come to this episode today, it hit me that I've been in waves of survival mode in my life. And what I can first remember of survival mode was my teenage years. And, you know, I grew up in a very country city called Eden, and our family didn't talk about trauma and feelings and how to manage those things. And so what I realize now is that I was depressed and I had anxiety and would have panic attacks as a kid, and I didn't have anybody to talk to about it. I didn't have any frame of reference for it. And so I realized that I've been in survival mode in and out of seasons in my life. I grew up with two siblings in my home. I was the oldest. And so the stereotypical older child dealing with perfectionism and control and all of that. And I grew up with a loving family. I think the start of those anxious feelings was the fact that I was raised without my father. And for us that have dealt with being raised without a father, it's the feelings of abandonment, of why wasn't I good enough? What was it about me that was unlovable? And so I didn't have a resolution to that until I was well into my 20s. When I was pregnant with my last children, my twins, and my mother told me, you know, we were young. My mom was 17, my dad was 19, and she's like, he never wanted kids. And so I wasn't a part of his life plan. And you can't really fault a person for that. You know, so that allowed me to give him grace. And it allowed me to give him, to see him in a different light. Because he had his own struggles in his life that, you know, I believe that God has all things in order. So there are things in his life that I didn't need to be privy to. And I always say, for individuals who have grown up without a parent or whatever circumstances that separated them from their biological family. God needed what they had in them to come together to create you. He didn't necessarily need you to be attached to them. So that's how I kind of resolved that. But, again, with the daddy issues comes the issues of trying to find daddy in every in everybody you meet, in every man that you meet, and not knowing your worth and not knowing your value. And so in those teenage years, I didn't know my worth and I didn't know my value. And I was depressed and didn't know why. Like, I had friends and I was a cheerleader and I was active in all the school programs and everything. And I would just go home and cry. I didn't want to eat. Like, a loaf of bread was my best friend. That was, what I would stomach because I just had to have something. But I would just go home and cry and not know why and not know what was going on with me. And I'd have these moments of anxiety rising and didn't know why. And I got to a point where I decided I just didn't want to be here anymore. So I remember going into my grandfather's bedroom. He had all kinds of health issues going on. Excuse me. And so he had a whole pharmacy on his nightstand. And so I went into his room and grabbed a random bottle. I don't even remember what it was. I just remember the little orange bottle, and I went and took it in my room. And I remember sitting on my floor, looking at the bottle, and I just broke down crying. And I remember, you don't really know the voice of God as a child, but I grew up in church, so I knew, that people heard God and all of that. And so in that moment and in those tears, there was a pause, and I felt the presence of God. And God showed me a glimpse of life after, of how my life would be used to help other women process some of the things that I had been through. At that point, I had been through, the daddy issues, but I had also been molested as a child, and I didn't really realize that that's what it was because it was older cousins. And so I'm like, this, I guess this is how people play. I don't know. But I remember a conversation at our middle school lunch table, and we were talking about our first kiss, and I said, oh, my cousin. And people looked at me like, you good? Like, no, I'm just playing. I'm just playing. I'm just playing. So that was when I realized, okay, maybe something wrong happened to me. And so, we may not consciously know that we've experienced trauma, but our bodies know that something is off and something's not right. And so my body carried that. And that night, sitting on the floor, all of that came rushing back. But God met me there with something greater. And so I made it through that wave. And then 2017, I lost my grandfather. And my grandfather was like my daddy. He was my rock. And, I remember part of that childhood anxiety is like, Lord, please don't let my pop-up die. Please don't let my pop-up die. And so 2017, when he, and it was quick. I had about a month. He lived with me for a month before he was gone. And my children actually found him, but didn't realize that he had passed. They just thought he was sleeping. And so when I came home and my daughter was like, Papa was on the bed sleeping naked, and my heart just dropped because he would never know when the kids were coming home, not be put together. And so she had closed his door. And I called my grandmom and I'm like, have you talked to Papa today? They were divorced, but they had reconciled, ironically, a few months before that. And so she's like, no, I haven't talked to him. And so my just heart dropped again. And he always checked the mail every day. So I went outside and the mailbox was overflowing with the mail from that day. So I call my mom and I'm like, I can't open this door. She's like, okay, you need to open it or get off the phone and call 911, or I need to call 911. So I called 911 and went in, and he was gone. And again, it felt like my whole world shattered. And then processing that, I dealt with the anger with God. Like, Lord, we had this thing, this promise, this understanding. Like, you're not gonna, this one you're not gonna take. But life doesn't work the way that we want it to. He was tired and he was sick and he was ready to go home. So just as much as God honors his commitments and promises to me, he honors them to him. So I had to let him go. And then COVID hit. And I lost my father-in-law. So another rock in my family was gone. And then a year later, that grandmother that I called died of breast cancer that I had no idea she had. The last time I saw her was the last day that she was lucid. And I'm grateful that in every instance of loss, God was able to allow me to have time with those people, not realizing that it would be our last time, so that those times could be filled with joy and not sadness. So I was grateful for that. I think one of the things about survival mode that we don't realize is that we just kind of keep pushing through and keep going. And so that's what I did after my grandma passed. But I got to a point where my husband and my daughter, who's my oldest child, she's 21 now. I think she was probably 17, 18 at the time, but they were just like, why are you so angry? And I didn't know. I didn't know. My responses were so short with people. Like, I didn't know. I didn't want to be close to people. So I started pulling away from relationships. And because I was afraid of losing someone again. So that was the next wave of survival mode. And that wave, my therapy, I tell people all the time, Jesus, therapy and meds, the right meds, were my lifesaver, my lifeline. So that's how I got through that wave of survival mode and started to really accept the purpose and the call on my life. And realized that everything that I had been through, God had purpose for. Now, he may not have, that may not have been his ideal plan for my life, but he's an all-knowing, all-seeing God. So anything that is allowed is something that he can use and be purposed. And sometimes, people look for answers of why did things happen? Sometimes things just happen because life sucks and people are idiots sometimes, and we were just happen to run into them.
That really sums it up, girl.
Yes, understanding that allowed me to move beyond survival mode. And now I can confidently say I'm in that place of thriving in my life.
Thank you so much for sharing. Yeah, life is a lot.
It is.
Oh my gosh. And I did find it interesting that you talked about the waves of survival mode. Like, I recognize I was in survival mode for a very long time. Post reconciliation of that, I was dumped right back in survival mode. And I thought, I'm done the work to get
Yes.
myself out. I've done what I needed to do. But then life happens and life gets really real. And even with the tools, even with support, even with a relationship with a higher power, navigating life
Yes,
is
it's hard.
hard.
It is hard. It is hard. And the thing that I also realize is that survival mode is okay for a moment, but it's not meant to be your permanent state. Sometimes all we can do is survive, and that's okay. But when it starts to linger and we start to stay there and we shrink and forget who we are, that's when it's the problem. But sometimes we need to just listen, today I survived and that was enough.
Absolutely. Now, you spoke about the father issues, right? And that's something that I resonate with. Your father wasn't there. Mine was, but was very absent emotionally. I talk about like the emotional neglect that I received from both parents. And while they were there, they were active. I was really left alone. So I resonate heavily with there's issues with self-worth and trying to find myself and wanting to be seen and accepted by a man. So when you spoke about I was looking for my daddy and like everybody, I can definitely relate to that. And what happens in these instances is we tend to be attracted to the
Yes, the worst
worst
parts.
characteristics, right? It's not that he was like this amazing worker. It's not that, he always had money. It wasn't this, it wasn't that. It was he has narcissistic tendencies. He's selfish.
He's a cheater.
He
All of
cheats.
that.
Yes. Like it's so odd how that happens. It's never ever the positive aspects when we are struggling with self-worth and self-love and as a result of the absence that we felt. And another thing that I found quite interesting was that you talked about how survival mode just has you pushing through. You really get into this space of autopilot, and that's the best way to describe it, in my opinion. Just getting up and doing what needs to be done. And for many, and I think that's the trap of survival mode, because it's not like we're still like there's a huge difference between being like chronically depressed and then being in survival mode, and both can happen at the same time. Let me just be clear about that. Depression stalls us, it stops us, it like nothing's
Yeah, it
happening
shuts
here.
everything down.
Yeah.
Everything.
However, survival mode often has us excelling in one area of our lives and completely failing in everything else. But because of this one area, like I know for some people it's their career, some people it's their business, some people do really well being a mother, even though they are in survival mode. And I think that's where the trap is, because it tends to make us believe that we are thriving, even though we recognize that something is missing. How would you describe survival mode if you had to describe it to somebody?
I feel like that's an amazing description. Like you said, the autopilot, it's like when you get in your car and you're driving somewhere and it's like you're there and you don't remember how you got there. You don't remember making any turns. You don't remember passing any lights. You don't remember any other cars on the road. You're just at this new place. And it's because it's become automatic. You do enough in your routine that it's automatic, so you can do it without thinking about it. And like you said, it looks good to everybody around you. No one looking at me outside of my family, no one outside of here would have seen me and thought, oh, she's going through something. She's battling depression. She is stuck in survival mode. I talk about survival mode in one of my books. And the way that I talk about it is it's like being on an island. And you see, it's an island, but it's across like a lake or a smaller body of water. You can see the bigger body of water, and you see all the people over there just enjoying life and having fun and being joyful. And you are stuck on your little island, and you desire to be there, but there's no bridge. and you don't see anything around you that can help you get there. So you just stay there and just accept it as your fate. But coming out of survival mode is okay, looking at the broken pieces of things that are around you, the little random pieces of tree that have fallen, and the little vines and things, and you start to build your bridge so that you can get to where those people are. But that doesn't happen until you get tired of just surviving. That doesn't happen until you get to a place where survival mode is so stifling that you feel like you're ready to be up out of here, like I was. And yeah, it's that lonely isolation, but looking like you have it all together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's that illusion that we create. And I think it's interesting that you say it, it's this choice. Like you have to make a decision. I remember hearing a quote that change only occurs when your willingness to change supersedes your willingness to remain the same. And that was a powerful quote that I may not have completely understood at first, because there wasn't that reconciliation of how much ch choice I had. When we take radical ownership of our lives, we then make decisions to actively improve our lives. But oftentimes we get sucked into the narrative that we are telling ourselves, which actually keeps us stuck most times anyway. And it's being able to change the narrative so that we can change our circumstances, which in turn changes our outcome.
And that I think about before survival, we have that moment of victimhood. And staying there is a choice. And we don't choose to live repeating those circumstances and situations that we've been through. But victimhood, survival mode, and eventually getting to the place where we're surviving, all of that serves a purpose. Like no one just stays in survival mode or that place of victimhood because it without it serving some type of purpose. For me, when I was living in that place of victimhood before I got to survival mode, it was like, okay, this is my excuse to be less than. This is my excuse for when I don't want to do something. It's like, I can't. It gives us an easy out, but it does us a disservice because we are not fully showing up as who we were created to be. And so survival mode is the same. It's something in there that serves us. And to make that decision to leave survival mode, you have to see, okay, what am I getting from being in this place? Like you said, but what do I want for my life? And what do I need to do to get there? That's when change happens.
And then also in that, and you spoke about this, is like really like leaning into your purpose, right? And most times we don't take time to even really consider that. And a lot of times our journey is preparation for our purpose, right? And when I recognized that, that was when I could be grateful for the journey that I traveled, right? Prior to that, even though I had exited victimhood, even though I worked really hard to exit survival mode, there wasn't that reconciliation that, like, everything that I went through was preparing me for who I need to be, right? Yeah, I mean, come on, I could definitely park the abuse. I could have learned that lesson another way. I really could have. But then there's this reconciliation that had I not gone through that, the people that I now help would have a different version of me. And the version that I have become was necessary in order to help those that I am meant to help. And I
Yeah.
remember someone saying to me, you know, your struggles today become the master class for somebody else tomorrow. And that's very powerful. I believe that all of us have a purpose in which we change the world.
Yes.
And
Yes.
for some, it looks differently. But I
It
think
does.
we all have the opportunity to be highly impactful when we are able to lean into our purpose and not get caught up in the journey to it.
Yes. Yeah, I tell people all the time, there's nothing that I have been through in my life that has not been used to impact somebody else's life. So I've been able to talk to women who have dealt with daddy issues, women who have been molested. I've been able to talk to women who have experienced depression and dealt with sexual assault because I was sexually assaulted as a teenager as well by one of those men that I was looking for my daddy in. And so I've been able to walk people through those individual journeys because I experienced those things. So I always say nothing is wasted in God's hands. When you allow yourself to understand that nothing you went through was your fault, when you release the shame of it, when you release the guilt of what you've been through, then you take ownership of it, like you said, you take ownership of your journey and you're able to share your story from a place of freedom. And that freedom, when people see you able to talk about what you've been through and you're not breaking down and you're able to smile after it, you're able to see how it prepared you for where you are now. They'll look at you and be like, I want that. How do I get that?
It becomes highly attractive to
Yes.
people who haven't reached that space. And it, then it, it's this new level of responsibility as well, right?
Yes.
Now the journey actually means a lot more.
Yeah.
So tell us about your books and how you work with people and how we
Yeah.
can find you online.
I am Latera Wise everywhere online on all social media platforms. And laterawise.com is my website. So I have recently, last week? Yeah, last week was the public an announcement of my recent book, my most recent book. It's a devotional, 31-day devotional called Unmasked. And it's available for pre-orders. It'll be released on May 27th. But this is one of those works that started back in 2017, 18, because I was rolling back then until grief shut everything down. And so what I've realized is those things were on the shelf for the time that they were needed, and now is the time. And so the Unmasked Devotional, I did a live series last year and turned that into the devotional. And it's really just a blueprint and a map for us to remove the mask and get out of survival mode and get to the place of thriving. Because the mask that we wear, it in theory is protection, but really it's not. And so once we remove the mask, we then have to deal with the things that we were trying to hide. And I think some people forget that just because you take the mask off doesn't mean everything is magically fixed. Now you got to deal with everything that's underneath it.
Now it's time for the work.
Yes. So this devotional and accompanying workbook, this is the work. And so I'm so proud of it. And you can find out more about that at my website, laterawise.com/unmasked. There are special VIP bundles there where it includes a 30-minute coaching session. So you can kind of see how the work, because I don't want it to be just another book that sits on your shelf. This is, I want you to heal for real. So the VIP box is it's an experience to walk you into that healing, because I don't want you to do it alone. We can't heal alone.
No. It's a
So,
community effort.
yeah, yes, it is. And so, with that, I also have a membership called the Overcomer Circle, which is for women who, again, have dealt with trauma, who are ready to live a full life but may not know how. So we talk about the emotional things, but then we also, like I said, I am a strategist. So we put action behind that work. And whatever that purpose is that you are supposed to be fulfilling, whatever you're supposed to be putting out into the world, we do the work to make it happen. So all that information is available on my website.
Okay. Well, all of that information will be in the show notes. Thank you so much for this conversation. I've truly
You.
enjoyed it. Thank you, listeners, for listening. And I just want to remind you, you were not built to break. You damn sure were not built to just survive. Disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week.